I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
You know, this is, listening to the testimony here, it's like there's two totally different realities.
Contrasting viewpoints on state abortion laws heard at a Senate committee hearing. Pro-life lawmakers and doctors say misinformation and rhetoric surrounding the laws are leading to deadly consequences.
They're not authorized. They don't use any kind of prescriptions.
An alarming report reveals a massive black market of abortion pills. The increased danger women face from the illegal flood of these pills into the United States.
An incredible parish toolkit online with a lot of different resources, both in English and Spanish.
Reaching out to parishes to help inform Catholic voters about state abortion ballot measures. A look at the initiatives in Maryland and New York.
Lawmakers that take an anti-abortion stance have created penalties that are so strict and severe that it places fear in the hearts and minds of doctors, the risk of losing their medical licenses to practice.
No state abortion law would prevent a doctor from providing needed emergency care to a woman if it included abortion under all of the exceptions to abortion laws. And again, things like miscarriage and ectopic pregnancy don't even qualify as abortion.
Testimonies on Capitol Hill differ on the interpretation and implications of state pro-life laws. Pro-abortionists claim that pro-life laws lead to the deaths of women seeking an abortion or having a miscarriage because doctors are afraid of legal repercussions. One witness says she was turned away from two hospitals while suffering from a miscarriage in Louisiana. Pro-life advocates say it's not the laws, but the misinformation and fear-mongering around the laws that is leading to these tragic cases.
Lies and misinformation that are being told about what state laws actually accomplish have direct harm on our patients. All of us on both sides of this issue should join together and call for better education of the public and better education of physicians.
Controversial statements by Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris, who called for ending Senate filibusters to pass federal laws protecting access to abortion. She made the comments during an interview with Wisconsin Public Radio that aired on Tuesday. The filibuster rule sets a 60-vote threshold to the Senate to advance legislation. Harris wants a simple majority of 51 votes. A concerning ballot measure in New York State, Prop 1, also known as the Equal Rights Amendment, purports to protect and bolster equality.
We have concerns that that could lead to courts basically interpreting the rights of minors to be, you know, on equal footing with adults, thereby stripping away parents' rights.
But critics say it would enshrine abortion into the state constitution, override parental rights, and limit any future pro-life laws. The wording of Prop 1 would broaden the state's anti-discrimination laws, which already protect against unequal treatment based on race, color, creed, and religion, to also include sexual orientation, gender identity and expression, pregnancy and pregnancy outcomes, as well as reproductive health care and autonomy. It does not explicitly bar abortion restrictions, but it could be used to challenge future pro-life laws. New York already has very permissive abortion laws. On the books, the state has a gestational limit to abortion at 24 weeks, but exceptions for the health of the mother, which include mental health, opens the door to allow abortions up to the moment of birth. This amendment would strengthen abortion as a so-called right. New York bishops issued a statement calling the amendment a wolf in sheep's clothing and said it would have dangerous consequences if approved by voters. Aisha Kreitz with the Frederick Douglass Foundation of New York joins us now to talk about the dangers of this measure. Aisha, how could this be used to prohibit future pro-life laws?
So one of the things, you know, there's many that are in here, but the ERA's passage would basically almost pave the way for constitutionalized not only the right to destroy unborn human life for all 9 months of pregnancy on demand, but also threaten the safeguards that we have in New York surrounding abortion, so that the legislature itself would, you know, if they tried to pass some of these safeguards like parental notification laws when minors go to seek abortions, informed consent laws, distributing of information of abortion to patients, you know, like the peer-reviewed studies and stuff like that, right? Because you're trying to give them more and more information. If somebody feels discriminated against or thinks that they're being discriminated against by you, giving them those types of information, you know, it jeopardizes all of those things by the way this is written. And it's because of the vagueness of it. You know, we have a lot of different laws as well, 24, 48-hour waiting periods when abortions, you know, before you can have the abortion. If we were to try and get more stringent laws, some of those could also be in jeopardy. So in New York, you know, the threat of abortion going away may not, you know, be in our future, but we can, again, tighten things up, and it's going to jeopardize the ability of us to be able to do that here in New York.
So, Aisha, if this movement passes, where does a pro-life movement go from here?
If it passes, it's not going to pass. if it does, that is a great question. I think that you're going to see the decimation of pregnancy resource centers. That's another one. It's going to be very difficult, I'll tell you. You definitely have to regroup and try to figure out something, because there's, you know, a lot of kids will
and
be destroyed. I can't answer that, because it would be devastating.
I'm curious, why do you think it wouldn't pass?
I think that once people realize what it is that this is saying, again, there's a lot more to this amendment. You know, if they wanted an abortion amendment alone, and that's what they were going to be focusing on, I think that the chances of this passing would probably be a lot greater than it is. But they've also added other categories. There's 11 different categories, including age, sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, ethnicity, that they want to add to this clause. And because they put all of these things together, you're jeopardizing more than just abortion. You're jeopardizing parental rights. You're jeopardizing, again, as I said, like pregnancy resource centers. You're jeopardizing single sex sports, schools, all of these things, because they just kind of put everything all together. And most people in New York, as long as they understand what this is, 67% of the people say vote no to it. We've had the other, you know, the proponents of this. There was $20 million that was pledged, and they pulled that money because they see that we are on the winning side of this. And so that gives us even more of a fighting chance. You know, again, once the Coalition to Protect Kids gets the money that they need to put the information out, it shows in our favor, which is amazing that, you know, we can win this. It is a winnable issue here in New York.
Wow. Well, I pray that we do win indeed. Thank you so much, Aisha, with the Frederick Douglass Foundation.
Thank you so much for having me.
A little further south along the East Coast, the state of Maryland will also vote on enshrining abortion into the state constitution. Abortion is legal in Maryland throughout all 9 months of pregnancy. The Catholic bishops of Maryland are urging voters to vote no on the measure that they say perpetuates a throwaway culture, diverts resources from women's well-being, and risks healthcare workers' rights and religious freedom. Jenny Kraska, the executive director of the Maryland Catholic Conference, joins us now to talk about the measure. Jenny, Maryland already has permissive abortion laws. Why take this step?
Sure. After Dobbs, Maryland, like many states, wanted to make sure that and wants to make sure that abortion is enshrined in the Constitution, along with, you know, this idea of reproductive freedom, to make sure that nothing can ever touch or be changed in terms of our abortion laws here in Maryland, and make sure that that permissiveness stays in place for a very long time.
Okay. What efforts are underway to educate voters about this measure?
Yeah, so we've put together at the Maryland Catholic Conference an incredible parish toolkit online with a lot of different resources, both in English and Spanish, including block notes, bulletin inserts, social media graphics, general intercessory prayers, We have Novena for Life, different prayers that parishes and individuals can use. And we're also trying to get to as many parishes around the state as possible to give talks to really educate folks about what this would do and what this means if it passes.
That's great. What are you hearing from parishes?
We're hearing a lot of different things. Parishes are very concerned at what this would do to Maryland and the fact that it disallows the ability for the legislature to ever make changes or make it at least very difficult is very concerning to a lot of parishioners.
Wow. How would you say abortion diverts resources from women's actual health care?
Yeah, so we want, to make sure that women have access to lots of different resources when it comes to their pregnancy. And I think once we, enshrine abortion into our constitution, it takes away the ability for us to put in safeguards for women and women's health, things like waiting periods, things like the ability to see an ultrasound. And those are all things that women should want and that they should have.
Jenny, do you think this measure will pass?
We hope, our hope is that it does not. Mm-hmm. We are doing everything in our power to make sure that Catholics and all people of goodwill get out and vote and make sure that they vote against question one on the Maryland ballot. But we do know that Maryland is unfortunately a state that has fully embraced this regime of abortion on demand.
Thank you so much for your work, Jenny.
Thank you.
The Catholic News Agency has an interactive map on state abortion ballots. Head over to CatholicNewsAgency.com and scroll to the bottom to check it out. A new report released on Wednesday by the American Life League uncovers a massive network of black market abortion pills that are being mailed to women in the United States. The findings indicate that networks of abortion providers and volunteers are working as so-called drug dealers via the internet and U.S. postal system to send these pills to customers. They say some organizations will ship pills free of charge. Vendors do not require a prescription or any medical consultation. And one website says it sells generic abortion pills that are not regulated or inspected by the U.S. government. Katie Brown, the national director of the American Life League, joins us to dive a little further into this report. Katie, it's alarming how many sites you mention and link to in the report. Tell us a little bit more about these sites, how they work, and the dangers they pose.
Sure. So what we found with these sites is they're essentially, for lack of a better term, they're operating as drug cartels, with the largest one being operated outside of Mexico. And there's another large one that's operated in India. But basically, the alarming thing about these is they're not authorized. They don't use any kind of prescriptions with these when they send women pills. They actually teach women how to set up a Proton email, which is a secure email. They teach them how to use a secure browser. They even go so far as to tell them, if you're going to walk to your mailbox to obtain these, wear a face covering, wear a hat, just going to extreme lengths to teach women how to hide these illegal abortion pills. And really, it just, as we were kind of uncovering this in our office, it just screamed at us that this really resembled a drug cartel, but not, a narcotic drug cartel. This is an abortion drug cartel.
Wow. Federal law prohibits importing drugs like marijuana. It's also illegal to mail them across state lines. Yet, according to your report, deadly chemical abortion pills are flooding into all 50 states. Are any efforts being made to stop this?
Unfortunately, no. And it really seems like it's the opposite. So the FDA has gone to extreme lengths to remove any kind of regulation from the abortion pills. And they're completely just unregulated. And we don't have any numbers either of how many women obtain these pills. And what's even worse, and what we're really trying to kind of raise the red flag with this report, is we don't have any numbers of how many women actually end up passing away from the use of these pills. And we know that it's happening. Just last week, there was a story of a mom from Georgia who had passed away from these abortion pills. So it's just completely unregulated. And it's kind of showing us the consequences of unregulated and unfettered abortion access in our country.
Which is tragic. So there is no vetting process in place for any individual who may want to purchase these abortion pills. How does that endanger a woman's consent to take them?
So it definitely, like I said, you know, they really don't ask for too much information when these women go and request pills. So there's actually been instances, of course, of people pretending to be a woman to obtain these pills and then, you know, attempting to drug their partner or their pregnant wife or their pregnant girlfriend to induce an abortion without their consent or without their knowledge. And we only know of a couple of cases, and thankfully in the cases that we do know about, people have been prosecuted for it. But the scary thing is, of course, it doesn't fit the liberal narrative because nobody wants to make the abortion pill look bad. So we really have no concept of how many women have been unknowingly drugged with the abortion pill. And maybe they just thought they had a miscarriage, but really there was somebody with kind of nefarious intentions behind it wanting to kill that child, which is just a terrifying reality.
That is terrifying. And Katie, thank you so much for your work and for being with us here today.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me on.
A new study by the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research indicates that most Hispanic Americans believe abortion should be legal. Some 66% of Hispanic Catholics and 62% of Hispanic Protestants believe that abortion should be legal in all or most cases. 12% of each believe it should be illegal in all cases. The report also shows that a majority of Hispanic Protestants and Catholics think that Congress should pass a law guaranteeing legal abortions nationwide. The study included a sample of more than 700. An American woman became the first person to use a controversial technology dubbed a suicide pod to take her own life on Monday. Police in northern Switzerland detained several people on Tuesday and opened a criminal case in connection to the 64-year-old woman's death. Reports state that one of those detained is a newspaper photographer. The pod, also called the Sarko capsule, is designed to allow a person to kill themselves by pushing a button to inject nitrogen gas into the chamber.
It's not just a nightmarish story. It's not just a huge scandal. It is also the concern for a slippery slope, how technology and marketing and many other things are being brought into play here in a way that is deeply troubling.
Swiss law allows assisted suicide as long as the person takes their own life with no external assistance and that those who help do not do so for any self-serving motive. In Belgium, the practice of euthanasia is on the rise. Pope Francis will be addressing it during his trip on Friday, September 27th. The practice has grown in Belgium over the last two decades. According to the National Institute of Health, in 2003, there were 235 euthanasia cases in Belgium. In 2023, more than 3,000 cases were reported, according to the Federal Commission for the Control and Evaluation of Euthanasia. Pope Francis has repeatedly condemned euthanasia. He says it's reflective of a throwaway culture and crime against human life. Coming up, a witness to life in Pennsylvania. Plus, how one apostolate provides care and comfort for the sick and dying. EWTN's Colin Flynn takes us to Hawthorne, New York. Massive crowds took part in the March for Life in Pennsylvania on Monday, despite the rainy weather. At least 6,000 people in Harrisburg made their way to the state capitol building, holding signs, chanting, and being a public witness to life. This is the fourth year the march has been held in Pennsylvania. Serving those who are suffering, the Dominican Sisters in Hawthorne, New York's apostolate focuses on nursing Christ's sick who are poor. Those suffering from incurable diseases are given a place to stay, food, companionship, and most importantly, love. EWTN's Vatican Bureau correspondent Colin Flynn gives us a glimpse of some of their beautiful work.
In the village of Hawthorne in Westchester County, New York, are a group of religious sisters caring for people dying of cancer. They are the Dominican Sisters of Hawthorne. And Nathan Andrews is one of their youngest patients and has been here for only 10 weeks.
When I talked to my doctor, she said that she didn't think that the active treatment would work, that I needed palliative care.
Wow.
And so I told her that I was Catholic, so she suggested this place.
Nathan had been living on the streets, and after developing cancer, the doctors told him there was little they could do for him. And without money to pay for a private hospital, he was referred to the sisters. Nathan is only 51.
How are you dealing with this psychologically?
You know, I really don't think about it that much.
Do you not?
No, I just, day to day, I just handle it. You know, it's a little scary when I do think about it, you know, because of, you know, the end.
The end.
It's, you know, kind of like the scariest thing.
And this is where he reveals himself.
Nathan is just one of about 20 patients currently here in Rosary Hill Home, a healthcare facility that was opened and has been run by the sisters since 1901. There are 31 sisters here, all under the guidance of Mother Maria Edward.
Really our greatest effort to take the homeless and those without families. We tell them, we're your family. We are trying to be Christ to the sick poor, and they are Christ to us.
This order, the Servants of Relief for Incurable Cancer, was founded in 1901 by Rose Hawthorne, who was the daughter of the famous American author Nathaniel Hawthorne.
What was it that tugged on the heartstrings of Rose Hawthorne all those years ago, at a time when those who were dying of cancer, it was a very scary thing. People even thought it was contagious.
Right.
What was it that she saw that affected her so deeply?
She saw the differences about how people were cared for. She knew Emma Lazarus, who was the Jewish poetress and did the inscription at the base of the Statue of Liberty. And Emma did die of lymphoma. And she died at home surrounded by excellent care at that time. Then she heard of this seamstress who was diagnosed with cancer and was sent to Blackwell's Island, and it was a pretty horrid place. And so it just hit Rose at the time, this horrible differences in what could she do.
Rose became Mother Mary Alfonza, foundress of the Hawthorne Dominicans. And over the years, Mother Alfonza established 7 cancer homes across the country with a mission to provide free health care, something they still do to this very day.
We have never charged anyone anything over 123, 24 years. We have much more liberty that way to do things in the manner that we want to do to make it as home-like as possible.
31 sisters, all focused on serving the guests brought to their homes.
You do love music. You want me to put it on?
And the youngest sister is 26, having been here for 7 years.
You've got that if you need me.
It's a home that I can welcome people who need it, who may have never had a good home in their lives, hoping that that will help prepare them for their eternal home in heaven.
So this is my friend Alva.
Alva's a movie aficionado.
Right.
Another one of the sisters is Sister Diana Marie. She became a Dominican sister after completing a master's degree in history in Washington, D.C. and working as a researcher for PBS television.
There's something about caring for the patients that always takes you out of yourself and makes you focus entirely on someone else. So you can forget the other things going on in your life and remember there's this person in front of you who needs you.
For many of them, I presume this is the first time in their life where they've felt someone being there for them, someone caring for them and loving them.
Yeah, I think that's the case for a lot more people than one would expect. I think most of us have at least someone in our life who's been there, who has showed us what unconditional love looks like. And to be able to be someone who even attempts to say, you still matter no matter what you can or can't do. I'm going to be here every day to do whatever I can for you. You're not going to do this alone. And to be very honest with them, you're here until you die. And we're going to be here with you. You're not going to do that alone.
The sisters lay out that reality to the patients, with charity of course, but remind them of the eternal life still to come.
It is peaceful. You know, I have a hope for eternal life. You know, I hope for a miracle, but at the same time, I accept my circumstances as it is. You know, because of salvation and eternal life, you know, that's my hope that I have. And, you know, just getting closer to Jesus.
This congregation of sisters have cared for thousands of people over 125 years.
They have a value and a dignity that is inherent and that nothing can change that. The Lord would have died for one person. I mean, he would have gone through all of that suffering for just one of us.
In Hawthorne, New York, Cullum Flynn for Pro-Life Weekly.
Walking with people in their most vulnerable moments, what a wonderful example of the culture for life. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.